Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, Cultimatum fans, before we dive into today's episode, we need a tiny favor from each of you.
That's right. If you love what you hear, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple and Spotify.
Your support helps us to reach new listeners and bring more awareness and attention to these important topics.
So tap that star rating, drop a quick review, and help us spread the word. It really does make a difference.
Thank you so much for tuning in and for your amazing support. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. Now let's get started with the show.
Here we go. Greetings and welcome back to another episode of Cultimatum, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And with me today is my co-host Melody. Hello, Melody.
Well, hello, Andrew. I'm really looking forward to this interview. Today's guest is Nora Bontrager, a former member of the Amish community who has courageously stepped into a completely new life. She shares her journey and insights with the audience on TikTok under the handle Living the Non-Amish Life. Nora's story is powerful. Not only did she leave behind a strict and deeply patriarchal culture, but she's also become a life coach and a human design teacher, helping others can reconnect with their voice and personal power. While she is mostly shunned by her former community, her parents do remain a part of her and her children's lives, which is a rare and meaningful in this context. Now living as a single mom, Nora speaks out openly about how Amish women's voices are often silenced, how men control nearly every aspect of her life, including what she could wear, and what it means to reclaim her independence. And in the middle of all that, she still finds time to share Amish recipes with her followers, adding a beautiful layer of connection of where she's come from. Nora, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yes, welcome. Thank you for coming. So where would you like to start?
Well, I guess I would start in the beginning. I did, like you said, grow up Amish, and just taking a deep breath here. It was a culture that was super strict, or is super strict. And like you already mentioned, like, all of my decisions were made for me, and I really had very little say as to anything that I would want to try out or explore in the world. Or really, I guess I didn't even know that there was more to explore as a kid. We were
taught, when we were first exposed to, like, knowing that there was a life other than what the life you were living in the Amish community, about what age did you figure out that there was something else out there?
I got glimpses of it as I was growing up. So there was a non-Amish couple that lived like right next to our property, my parents' property. And they would come by and just hang out sometimes. Like, we didn't have a whole lot of exposure to the non-Amish at all, except for like a few select people that would come by and just as friends. And this one couple really showed me a deeper kind of love that is out there, or like a bigger world. Like, so there's little things like they brought us what they call dilly bars from Dairy Queen, and Buster bars, like ice cream bars, basically. from Dairy Queen. That, like, Dairy Queen, let's say, I would say it was maybe, I don't know, 7 miles from my house. And I would not have known that Dairy Queen exists except for them bringing us Dilly Bars and Buster Bars. And it was such a treat. Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't buy those things. My parents didn't buy, like, we raised our food, which is a good thing in a way.
But they allowed you to eat it?
Yes.
So the neighbors bought it for you and gave it to you as a treat, and they allowed you to eat, your parents allowed you to eat it?
Yes, they did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, my parents were super, like, healthy. They ate healthy and they wanted us to eat healthy. And so we didn't get to, like, enjoy a lot of treats like that. But they did allow us to eat them when the neighbors would bring them by. And I would say another thing that these people taught me was, growing up, I don't remember ever getting hugs from my parents. I remember one time running to my mom in just complete devastation about something that had happened. And I just ran to her and I flung my arms around her just for some sort of comfort. But other than that, I don't ever remember being held by my parents, hugged by my parents. But this couple, the guy would give us hugs. And it was the first, like, even idea that I had of what that could feel like, of, like, physical contact with another person just out of love. And I could tell it felt safe. It felt like it was from love. So
how big was your family growing up?
You said how big?
Yeah. How many children? What, like, I'm assuming you're one of many siblings.
Yeah, my family was actually not as big as most families. So I had 3 sisters and 1 brother. I should say I have. I still do. So yeah, there was four of us.
That's moderate size for Amish.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of. And there's lots of families that have way more kids than that. But
yeah. So, not to concentrate too much on this neighbor, but you had a neighbor which was about how far from you that was, and I believe that the Amish called them the English. Anybody who wasn't Amish was called the English.
Yeah.
How far was this neighbor who bought you Dairy Queen? How far away was he?
About the same too, as so he was right next to our property. So I guess like 7 miles or something like that.
And they had children, so you were friends with their kids, or
they were
at the same age?
They were older. So they have kids, but their kids were grown. And so it's almost like they came in as grandparents for us in some ways. So yeah, I was like grandparent figure.
I'm trying to understand why he would buy you Dairy Queen.
Just for the sake of doing something. You know, I think that they saw the oppression. They saw how little we got to experience isolated things like that. Yes. And I think it was, I believe that was out of the goodness of his heart, of just wanting to share a little bit of goodness from, like, something that we would not have been able to experience otherwise. That's my belief.
And being neighborly. Yeah, I think so. I think you're probably right.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, and we need more of that in the world. But just being the host of this podcast, hearing horrible stories about cults, I thought maybe there was an ulterior motive that we didn't know about.
Yeah, I do believe, like, I look back at this experience with this older couple as, like, it's almost like, I don't know if you want to call it an angel coming in and kind of, like, I don't know. I don't know why they were in my life, because really they should not have been. Like, we weren't supposed to even connect a whole lot with outside people. And yet my parents, somehow that was okay. Like, I don't know. So that's a good question. I do look back at it as, like, a really good thing that happened.
Well, and maybe your parents wanted to keep a neighborly relationship with them too, because they did live next door.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what would, then would, I'm assuming your next experience with the outside world was probably sometime in your teen years. And did your sect of Amish, did they practice the Rumspringa, or is that something that they didn't do? Because I know that varies from sect to sect.
It does vary. I did not do that. So in the community that I live in, most of them do the Rumspringa thing. When they turn 16, they go out and they party and they like dress non-Amish. A lot of them do that. But I was raised in, so there's, the community is divided into districts. So like there's a big community with many districts inside the community. And then each district has like a bishop and ministers, like a deacon. And there was three districts where I lived, like inside this community, that was like even more strict than the majority of the Amish in this area. And I was raised in this little pocket inside the Amish that was like super, super strict. And so if I would have tried to go out and do the Rumspringa thing, like the partying thing, like the way that the world hears about, you know, like you kind of have this idea of like they're partying and stuff. If I would have tried that, I would have been kicked out. I would not have been allowed to be at home. And I was at a point in my life where I would not have known what to do if I would have been kicked out of my house. Like they don't train you to move out. They don't teach you anything about outside your parents' home. And there was just no way that I could risk that. So I didn't try. I was like, I can't take that route. So yeah.
So it wasn't part of your sect, your district. They didn't practice it in your, like you said, there were districts.
Yeah. Yeah. In the few, like the three little districts, that little pocket, we didn't do that. We did get together as youth. We called it the youth getting together. And we would like, on a Sunday night, we would sing songs. We would sit down and sing like for probably, I would say maybe 2 hours. We'd eat a big meal and then sing. But that was about the extent of our interactions for like a Sunday night. And then there was this fine line of like boundaries and rules. And I was one who had kind of tried to test those rules and try them out. And so where the rules or the line was, where I was at, was on a Sunday afternoon, like after church, some of the youth would do things like play games, play volleyball, play certain types of games. And I was on the verge of not being allowed to do that. Don't ask me why. I mean, that's just like, I guess, too.
I was just going to say, why? Were you being punished?
If I were to really sit and try to answer that, it's probably because of like Sunday is a day of rest, supposedly, because of like Christian values and teaching. And my guess is they would say that, let's like just take volleyball for example, it would be too close to being like work. Other than that, I don't know if there's other rules. There's so many rules that were just unspoken, and if you ever tried to question them or challenge them, you get punished. And
I'm a little
like
confused, because it sounds like other youth your age were doing this. So is this, right, were they from a different sect and they were allowed to do it? And the sect you were part of was more strict about the Sabbath?
I wouldn't say it's a difference in sect, because we were all Old Order Amish is what we call ourselves. But it's the difference in rules in the districts that you lived in. Does that make sense? Each district has their own set of rules. And so the community
and the district
as a whole,
you were part of, was more strict.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was my parents' rule in the district that I was in. was like, the rule was you don't play volleyball. You don't do things like that on a Sunday. Does that make sense?
Yes. And
no,
it doesn't make sense.
Cult survivor, it makes sense to me. We weren't allowed we weren't allowed to cook on the Sabbath. We weren't allowed to work. We weren't allowed to spend money or do anything like that. I mean, it was very strict for me too. And I wasn't Amish, but I was in a cult. But I know that my understanding from watching your TikTok videos, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that you married somebody in the Amish. Do you want to talk about how that came about? Was that arranged? How did that happen for you, and what age were you?
Yeah, I was married Amish, and it was not arranged for me. I had like a small group of people that I could pick from. And this was an unspoken thing also. It's like, if somebody's like, we used to call them fancy. If they're too fancy, like their dress or the way that they live or the rules are too out there according to where we were at with our rules, I couldn't pick from those people, even though they were Amish. So I had to pick within like somebody that was close to their rules were close to the same as my rules. So in a way, like I got to pick in a way not, but like it wasn't that somebody came in and arranged it for me. So that was good. I got to pick and I did marry the guy that I wanted to marry at the time. I was 20 when I got married. I can talk a little bit about the dating process if you're open.
Yes, please. And let's just back up just a little bit. So you said you got to pick the man you wanted to marry? Is that so?
Yes.
You had your eyes on this man for a while, I would imagine.
So the guy that I married was on the verge of not being acceptable as far as like the rules and stuff. And I pushed it a little bit. Like, it was kind of outside of my family's boundaries. And sometimes I try this with a lot of things to see how far, like, where's the line? Because it was, a lot of it was unspoken. A lot of it I had to kind of pave the way myself and to find if I hit a boundary, what's going to happen? Like, what's the response? How are they going to respond to that, and what is allowed for myself? I had to understand that for myself. And so I would bump up against things. And so as far as like the guy that I picked to marry was like kind of on the verge of that, but they did let me marry him and they were okay. Like it was okay. So that's one thing that I was like, I tried.
How did you meet him and how did he know that you were interested in him?
We were with the same youth group. So how do I explain it? There's big groups in like the youth would come together and the people with the same boundaries, like kind of the same boundaries, the same rules would gravitate together. And so even among the bigger community, like the community as a whole, if there were pockets of other little areas that were like more strict, we would gather together. Like we would hang out together. And the guy that I married was like kind of, he was close enough to the same as we were, as like that he would come to our youth groups and stuff. And so we would hang out together and got to know each other. And also our parents knew each other when they were with the youth. Like they did the same thing together. They did the partying thing. But we didn't. It's another whole story. But yeah, that's how we got to know each other. We would hang out together.
And do you date? I mean, how do you?
It's a good question.
Yeah, I can't. I'm trying to visualize what that looks like. So you hang out with this group of people, but one of them is a gentleman that you have a crush on, I'm guessing, right? You had.
Yes.
Eyes for him.
Yeah.
Or as we used to say, you were sweet on him. And I'm guessing it was reciprocal. But what does dating in the Amish community look like? Because you couldn't go to he couldn't take you to Dairy Queen. We know that already, right? You couldn't ask mom and dad, can I borrow the buggy tonight?
yeah. right? To take Nora to the Dairy Queen. So what would you guys do?
Yeah. So like I said, we would get together and sing on a Sunday night. And our dates looked like after the singing, we would call it a singing. After the singing was over, we would go to my house and we would sit and talk, pretty much a date. And then it would last until around midnight, and then he would go home. And I'm just like kind of sitting with this myself. I'm like, that was a date. That's what we did. We did get to talk like sometimes throughout the week too, when there was like get togethers as far as we did play volleyball during the week. Yeah, some of us did. Some of us that dared to branch out and be a little bit more wild, I guess.
How long did that dating process last until you actually were able to get married?
I think we dated for like a year and a half altogether.
That's actually a longer process than I would have thought.
Yeah, me too. I thought that if the elders, if that's what we're going to call them, saw that you two were sweet on each other, that they would have forced a marriage. But that's just from hearing that from other cults. They would have either separated you or made you get married, one or the other.
Yeah, I guess the timing with dating wasn't a thing that they forced on us. In some ways, my parents were good in not forcing us to do things like that. I have some relatives that experienced things that I didn't because their parents were just even more strict and would intervene with like the relationships. I have a cousin who had tried to date twice and his parents would just interfere and break them up and he never got married. Like he's never. And I feel like it's because of that. His parents were just like, they would just break them up. They would just not let him be with the girl that he wanted to be with. So in some ways, like my parents were good with that. And I want to acknowledge that. But as far as dating.
I might have missed it at the beginning. What state were we in? Are we in at this time? Which Amish community?
Indiana community.
Indiana. Okay.
Yeah. So something else about dating, my parents taught us to date hands off, like no physical contact at all. And so even just like holding hands, we weren't allowed to do that. I remember driving home from church one day. I was in the buggy with him. We were driving home to my house and there was a ladybug on his shoulder and I brushed it off. And like without thinking, because that's what you do, right? You brush it off if there's a ladybug on somebody's shoulder. And I remember feeling so guilty for having done that because I touched him. That's how.
Wow. So yeah. I guess that leads to another question for me. If there was a no touching policy and you were having, let's say, midnight chats on your porch, so to speak, was that supervised then by an adult?
It wasn't. I was in a place.
So they just put a lot of trust in you.
Yeah. And a lot of fear. A lot of fear. So I was in a place where I genuinely wanted to do what's right. And I wanted to follow the rules. Like if the rules are right, if I'm going to hell, if I touch my boyfriend, like I will not touch him. Because I wanted what's right. And so I stood super strong in that. I know, like, a lot of couples don't. A lot of couples actually didn't. But I was in a place where I really genuinely wanted what's right. And I was like, I told him, like, that's what I want. He respected that, which was incredible. Like, thinking back, I'm like, I didn't even question that would be a thing or not because of how much I wanted to be on point with like what God wants or what's right for me.
Right. You were very indoctrinated and you were following the rules. You believed in what you had been taught from childhood. Yeah.
So very indoctrinated. So is it fair to say that you never even kissed him until after you were married?
Yes, it's true.
Wow.
And then what happens is you're dating. There's no contact. No touch at all. God, this makes me emotional. But there's nothing. And then you get married one day. In the morning, it's wrong for you to touch him. In the evening, it is wrong for you to not do everything and anything that he wants you to do. You can't say no to anything.
Wow.
And there's this flip. Yeah. This
That's very, very indoctrinated.
Yeah. And
this is after you're married.
Yeah. So in the same day, in the morning, it's wrong to touch in any way. In the evening, it's wrong to not touch in any way, if that's what you want. And then from then on, it's that way. Like you just can't say no. There's no room for boundaries. There's no room for space or needs or anything.
Well, and I don't know if you experienced this or not, Nora, but I would be curious. But I know for me, with my religion, and my religion was pretty strict like that too, it was very hard for me to turn that off and on. Like, we were taught to not do anything sexual up until marriage. And then it was very hard to turn that on and allow that. I felt a lot of guilt even about turning it on after I was married, because I had been so indoctrinated to turn that off, to turn those emotions or those feelings, anything sexual, just turn it off. And it's not like it's a light switch and you can just flick it on. Then you're really awkward and uncomfortable when it comes into that position. And now you're like, oh, everything's okay now. And it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And there's a level of trust that needs to happen. Like, there's no process for trust to be built in that, when it's just like that switch just needs to be flipped. And now we're good. Now right. we're like, now we're on all the time.
Exactly.
Like you said, this can't work that way. And it creates trauma. It creates so For much sure. pain.
I'm going to, as the outsider here in the cult world, and even though I studied parts of the Bible in college, which was a long time ago, is there anything in the Bible from any of these religions that forbids this? I mean, was it forbidden to touch the opposite gender up until marriage, or was that just an Amish thing? Or Melody, was that the same for you?
We didn't have the no touch policy, but certainly we weren't supposed to be like even kissing. But I will say, we did not follow that rule. We were kissing before we were married, but we weren't supposed to be.
About touching. Like she was, like Nora said, that she felt guilty taking a ladybug off his shoulder.
Ours was not that strict, although we weren't supposed to just be walking around holding hands either. But it wasn't so strict that if we brushed up against each other. But I will say, my cult became very strict about that after I left. They became much more strict, to where you know that the women eventually were wearing burkas and they weren't even allowed to see the men. There was a wall built between the sanctuary where the men and the women were completely separated, and the elders decided who was going to marry who. Yeah, it's one of those things where it is very confusing, and I think it represses women, sexually represses them, to where they don't feel that they can express themselves sexually, because one, they're taught not to, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, now you can. Now we want you to be a sexual being. And then you're like, well, I don't even feel comfortable doing this. I don't even know how to do this, because you know you've never been experienced. You've never been exposed to anything. So you feel like everything is just dirty. Everything in your mind is wrong and dirty and bad.
Is that how it was for you, Nora, even after you got married?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not even just that after you're married, we want you to. It's you have to. It's like, now you have to.
Now it's an expectation. It's your duty now.
Yeah.
All right. So let's pick up the story from there. So you marry the man that you had eyes for. And was it what you thought it would be, the marriage? And walk us through the first year, the second year.
Boy, if it was what I was want or what I imagined. No. I married to leave my home. Literally, that was why. I mean, I did like the guy that I was marrying, But even in the process of getting married, I knew I'm leaving to get out of my parents' home. That's my reason. That's like, I was so happy that I was picked to get married, that I was able to get out. And so that's, I went into the marriage with that. And
where'd you get a house? He buys the house, or how does that work?
Yeah, we rented for a while. We rented for like a year, and then we did buy a home, our own home. Yeah, we had, so I have four kids, and my oldest was born right after, like 9 months after we were married. 11 months later, we had another kid. So currently, my boys right now are both 18. They're like, for a month there, they're the same age. That's how, there is no teaching. The only teaching that you get is that you have babies and you continue to have babies. And that's what you're here for. If you get married as a woman, you're here for having babies, raising babies, and then everything that goes along with that, like the cooking and the sewing and the gardening, the homemaking, just the whole thing with that.
So walk us through then, where was the breakup of your marriage and or your leaving the Amish? How did that all transpire?
Yeah,
that's a good point. So like I said, we had two babies under one at one point. And I came to a point where I was so stressed out. I was so overwhelmed and I was physically not doing well. I wasn't recovering well. My body wasn't taking it well. And my husband at the time was stressed out. He was bringing in the money and he had a wife at home who wasn't doing well. He had two little babies at home that are crying and not feeling like they're taken care of well because everybody is stressed out. And I would say in the first year is when I first realized that something's not right. I remember the first time when we had our like first little, it was almost like a fight. And I didn't go into the marriage thinking that we're going to fight. I don't think anybody does probably, but that was not in the forefront of my mind. And I remember one day when we were talking and he walked out on the conversation. And I was like, damn, like I was so broken on the inside, didn't know what to do. And so that was kind of the beginning of things breaking down for us. I didn't trust him fully after that because I didn't know when he's going to walk out on me. I didn't know, not necessarily walk out on the relationship. He walked out of the house. Like he went out and he was upset, which is, I mean, many people experience that. But that's where in my heart, I knew that something is not working and yet had no tools, no idea what to do. So I went into survival of just surviving anyway. And so after we had our boys, I imagine they were one and two or something. We got connected to a counselor from Ohio and he had come into Indiana he did seminars and we went to one of his seminars. I was like, we need to go. Well, I guess at that point he was kind of like, yeah, like we were in agreement with that. And we loved what he was bringing. He brought us a new perspective on what God can be, like a loving God, not somebody up in the sky that's ready to whip you every time you make a mistake. And we were drawn to that. We were like, this is what we're needing. This is what we're looking for. We need this. And so we went to Ohio and we spent a week there in Ohio with this guy, this counselor. And that was super out of the ordinary for the Amish. And kind of around that time, go ahead.
A quick question about that. Was this an Amish-based counselor or was this somebody outside of the Amish community?
He was Mennonite, so not Amish. And It was around and that not time. English. Well, they would call him English because he's not Amish.
Okay.
But yeah. It was around that time when we went out that the Amish bishops in the community decided that this guy is not okay. People can't go to him anymore. He can't come here for seminars anymore. We need to ban him. We need to get him out of our community.
Because people were leaving, I'm guessing.
People were finding truth.
Mm-hmm.
And people were hungry for truth. And so we were at that point where we had gone, we found some like pieces of truth that we were like, we cannot ever let this go. And we came back and we started talking to people about it, which is not a great idea. Don't go talk to just anybody. But we did. We tried it. We were excited. And the bishop and the ministers that we lived in at the time came by at our house, all sat down in our living room and told us that we can't talk to this guy anymore. We can't talk to anybody who's been to him. We need to drop everything. We need to stop everything. And we decided that
we can't. This is how I know they were a cult, because they were trying to stop you from having any outside influence. That is cult-like behavior.
Well, yeah, that comes right out of the bite model. One of the four. Yeah,
absolutely, yes. The fact yes, that, trying to control the their information.
Right, exactly. And this Mennonite gentleman that came in with new information or the truth or how he was changing people's minds and what's the opposite of indoctrinating or new indoctrination, but a different type?
I would say just people's minds were being...
It got you to leave.
Yeah.
Right?
Eventually, yes. Yeah. We, at that point, we decided that, we can't go back. We were in agreement with that. The two of us, we were like, we can't undo this. We've learned something. You can't unlearn something. And so we ended up moving to Michigan, to a community where they were new to this guy. They didn't know about him and they were a little bit more open to things. And we talked to them at the bishop and the ministers of that church. And we talked to them about why we need to move, why we're thinking about moving to their district or their area. And they told us that they don't know this guy. They don't know, they were honest with us. They said they don't know how they feel about him at this point. They don't know him enough. And so, but we did make the move and we were there for about a year and a half. And then they decided that they don't agree with him either. That kind of belief or that kind of truth that we can't continue with learning that kind of thing while we're there in their church district. So we had made this move and we were we came to the point where we were like, there's nothing left for us to do. It's we tried. They banned us from, the Amish have this thing where if you're a member of the church, meaning you're baptized, you get to, they make it look like you have a say in forming the rules, making decisions. You don't really, but they told us that we can't have a part in that anymore. We don't have a say about anything anymore. So that was the first step.
So where did you go from there?
That was the first step from them kicking us out. We knew that's what's happening. And we were like, any other Amish community that we will try is going to do the same thing. We were like, this is the only thing. I mean, not the only thing, but we've tried everything. And so we ended up leaving at that point.
Okay, so you guys left the Amish community together.
We did, yeah.
How old were you at this point?
We were both 26 when we left. Yeah, that's one thing that I look back on and I'm like, we were super blessed that we were on the same page with that. It feels like we needed each other to help each other out. It didn't work out after that, but we were in agreement up until then. like things, yeah, we were on the same page with things.
So you left and then the marriage fell apart after that?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we had, the marriage was falling apart in the first year. There was a point when we lived in Michigan, there was a point when we were doing pretty good. That was the best we had ever experienced. We were doing...
Well, you had come across this new teachings, these new teachings, and you were both excited about it. I think it probably lifted you, your spirituality and his and the marriage briefly, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You saw, oh, maybe there's hope, maybe there's something, you know, there's something new. But when that got banned, or you got, you, yeah, eventually it was like a second honeymoon, but, you know, they'll ultimately end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you divorced now?
Yes, I am. Yeah. When we left, I think that, so the way that I describe it is you pick somebody out of, it's off of one planet. You pick them up and you drop them into another planet and you're like, there you go. Figure it out. We had very little support and the amount of just not knowing how the world works. How to operate yeah. in the world outside of the Amish was just traumatic enough that we didn't
yes.
survive that. We didn't come back from that.
Well, and I can relate to that too, because I got married in my cult and left with my husband at the time. And then we divorced after leaving. And like I say is that, and you probably will relate to this, Nora, is that you marry cult versions or Amish versions of each other. And you don't really know who you're marrying or who you are. And then you get out and you're like, am I even compatible with this person without the religion being what ties us together?
Yeah, true. Hey, I was at the point where, well, I started searching for help. I was like, I left the Amish and I'm still struggling. I'm still in survival. I'm still in so much pain. I'm like, what is going on here? I need help. And so I looked for support and he did a little bit too, but I was wanting to grow out of the Amish mindset and mostly the mindset where the men get to say, like the men get to say for things that I want a say, like I want to be my own person. I want to be able to know what I believe. I want to know that I can make a decision on my own. And I think that like that's where we were kind of really broke down is that I always say you can take somebody out of the Amish, but you can't take the Amish out of the person if that person doesn't want it. And so I think that was harder for him to kind of let go that idea of
meaning he still felt that he should have this final say or the ability to control you or tell you what you could and couldn't do, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Even after the divorce? Or this was during the divorce or?
That was before we like, yeah, before I filed for a divorce. I do still explain.
So you left the Amish, still married, but you left the Amish mentally. Like, so here we go, Melody, PMO, right? She's physically yeah. in, but mentally out.
Right. Right. Well, he was POMO. I think he left
physically
the Amish.
Out.
He was physically out, but mentally he was still in. Mentally he was still holding on to the beliefs. So
and Nora yeah. would have been physically
she was both,
out.
She was both physically and mentally out. So she
mentally
was done
out.
With it. Yeah, she was done with the Amish beliefs. But he still at least wanted to hold on to the control that men had within the Amish community, meaning he still wanted to have that control over her. And she wasn't wanting that to be her future.
Right. Good for you, Nora. And so you fought back. I don't mean physically, but
yeah. Yeah.
You fought for your independence.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried for like a long time to just try to work it out and try to communicate and try to talk things through. And I came to the point where I actually talked to someone who was professionally like a support system, and the guy was like, "You have got to leave," because it was physically, I don't know if I want to say killing me, but I was dying inside. And that, like, that thing, that hearing somebody say that from a guy, from a man, told me that I need to leave a man. And that switched something inside of me. I'm like, oh, there's, it's not just me. It's actually another guy seeing the abuse, the dysfunction.
Well, so that's the oppression.
At that point, I hadn't, like, guys were just all the ones that were would oppress. I hadn't known guys that would see it and be like, you don't deserve that. Like, don't be there. So that was a new experience.
Right, exactly. It was a different male perspective that didn't have the Amish spin on it.
Yeah, true.
It's almost like a Dairy Queen treat. He was, you know, I'm making the analogy that you, like when you were a child, you had something that you didn't know existed. So you said you hadn't, this neighbor didn't bring you that Dairy Queen, you would have never known that that Dairy Queen existed. So all of a sudden now here you're talking to a professional. I'm guessing he was some sort of a social worker or somebody, but he was a male, but he saw that you were dying inside and he gave you some very good advice to leave, but you didn't know, wouldn't see that coming from another male, because all you knew that the men in the Amish community controlled women. So very interesting. So
I like that, Andrew.
Yeah.
Yes. He gave her the equivalent of an ice cream treat.
Of an ice cream, right.
Yes, but it was freedom. It was a symbol of freedom for her.
So take us from there. Where did he get you? And where are the children, right? You have four kids at this point?
Yeah. Yeah, my youngest was born after we'd left. So she was about 7 when I made that decision. And he moved out and he lived in the same town for many years. It's been 5 years since the divorce. And we've co-parented. Like, the kids are at my house mostly. They're at my house most of the time. When we separated.
You were homeschooled, I would imagine, growing up, right?
No, I wasn't. I was in a private school. Like, the Amish have their private schools with just Amish kids only.
But where are your kids, not the young ones? Where did they go to school?
They've been in the public. I did homeschool them public for a couple of years, but they're in public school now. Like, I was like, I had to figure out like a job, run a home by myself. And I was like, I can't homeschool. And they were okay with going to school too. Yeah. A lot to navigate.
For sure.
So you said you got a job?
I did, yeah. I did what every ex-Amish woman knows to do. I went and cleaned houses. And I've been doing that ever since. I clean homes. I can do that. Like, I didn't go to school past 8th grade, get an education for anything. And I know there's jobs that I could get outside of, like, just cleaning houses. But I needed something that was flexible for my kids. Their dad never been super available. Like, he actually told me he doesn't want them much, like a whole lot. He wants me to have them. And so I've been alone, like on my own, a lot with them.
Does he contribute financially?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. But I had to figure out something that I can do that, let's say a kid's sick at school and I need to go pick him up. I need to be flexible. And this is the only thing that I've been able to figure out that works for my schedule.
Here's a question that I don't think I ever remember asking an ex-Amish. Did you learn to drive?
I did.
I would imagine that's Melody, I just realized that we never really ever asked that question.
Yeah.
Right? No, we haven't. The Amish don't drive. In the Amish community, correct?
Yeah, it does.
So how was that for you? That was pretty wild, huh?
Yeah, it was driving a car, listening to music, watching a movie. Like, all these things were like, oh my God, like, this is real. This is possible. I was asked recently.
Do you have a cell phone?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty wild, right?
Yeah.
It's just strange to talk to somebody who for 26 years didn't have television. And, you know, this is 2025. So you, getting to drive, getting to watch a movie, having the technologies of the modern age, you didn't have for 26, 25 years, whatever it was.
Yeah, no phone to scroll, no way to like find any information at all. I remember going to my parents' encyclopedia section and I was like, I need to know some of these words. It was around when I was planning on being married and I wanted to understand some of the sexual, like whatever. I wanted to know some things. I was reading a book about it, but I didn't understand the words. And so I went to the encyclopedia and I looked up some words and that was like the only way to find some information on anything. Like there was just no access to anything.
Now, at this moment, you're on a device called a computer, which you're talking to two other people, which probably, you know, 5 years ago, you would have never even imagined that you'd be doing this. And this device is like the encyclopedia that you could, at your fingertips on this little keyboard, you can get anything right. So how is your mind, how did you wrap your mind around something? I'm just finding it interesting that you, this is all within the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, totally. It's incredibly overwhelming with all the, like the amount of information that comes at me sometimes. And it's still
coming.
Yeah. And I'm just the other day, I was sitting in a conversation again, like it's a normal occurrence for me to be in a conversation where people are talking about like music that they grew up with, or do you remember this movie? Or do you remember that? Like when we did this and that. And like kind of a thing that normal society, most people know, my age, they're like in the 80s or in the 90s, we did that and this. And I'm there, but I'm not.
But you weren't. No.
It's like a void for me. Like there's nothing there for me. I can't.
Nora's like, remember when we had no electricity?
Yeah, that. Remember when we drove a horse?
Yeah, exactly. So totally different frame of reference. Yeah, exactly. No, the cultural things that you weren't exposed to because you were living in the Amish community in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, I still sit in my car like daily whenever I drive. It's almost like I'm just in awe of something that could function like this. It could work like this instead of like a horse buggy.
We got to begin to wrap it up, but I have a list of questions here. So maybe I'll do a quick rapid fire. Have you been outside of, so you've been to Indiana and Michigan. Have you traveled anywhere else? Have you been to New York, Los Angeles, Florida? Have you seen any parts of the United States?
I have. I've actually done quite a bit of traveling myself, and a lot of it has come from me going to retreats, events that like are meant to help me heal, basically, just to be with people that support me in growing out of this trauma and the whole thing.
So you've been on an airplane?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Wow. Good for you.
Thank you. That had to be a culture shock.
Because I could imagine growing up, you would hear the airplanes overhead, but never once imagined that you would be in one.
Nope. Yeah. I didn't ever see myself not be Amish. Like before I actually left, even let's say a half, like 6 months before I left, I never saw myself not be Amish. I was here for it. Like I was.
That's all you knew.
Yeah. And that's what I thought. That's right. I thought that that's what I'm here for. That's my destination. And I wanted that. Like, if that's what gets me to heaven, I'm going to do it in some way.
Okay, that's a good transitional point to ask you where you are today in your spirituality. So you left the Amish community, but where are you in your faith today? And where do you see yourself? And are you in, a follow-up question would be, are you in another relationship?
I'm not currently. I've been single. I've dated some, but not a whole lot. So I've been like, I would like that, but I also know that I've needed to do a lot of healing before I get into another relationship. And a lot of my energy and focus has been towards like my kids and just making sure that we're taken care of. So I haven't, not in another relationship at this point.
But where are you in your faith today?
That's an interesting question. I don't call myself Christian. I'm not into religion. I do believe in God. There's a lot of the principles that I believe in, but I guess the way that most of it is taught doesn't resonate with me. And I kind of have gone onto a path of discovering, like, what does God mean to me outside of any type of anybody telling me, like other people telling me what the Bible means, or like any scripture or whatever, or what God means to me or whatever. And so I'm kind of on my own little journey with that. I would call myself spiritual because I do have beliefs in a God. Just
awesome. That's a good answer.
Thank you.
And honestly, a lot of people who have come out of cults have a very similar experience. And, you know, they want to believe in something, but they know organized religion isn't where they're drawn to. And they're like, okay, well, I got to figure this out. And it's not an easy process. It's a long process. And that will lead to my question, Nora, is if you were to give advice to anybody who might even be, let's say they're Amish and they're sneaking a listen to a podcast and they happen to hear this episode, and they're thinking and starting to doubt some of their beliefs in their community, what advice would you give to them?
The thing that I would want them to know is that if it's not right for them, they don't need to stay. And there is always going to be somebody somewhere who's right there ready to support them if they need to make that step. Find that somebody. Do not give up until you found the person that can support you, or the people, or whoever, whatever it is, to make that step. There's no needing to give up or settle for something that's not right or doesn't resonate anymore.
Love that. Very good. And the last thing we'll end with is, Nora, you have a pretty good following on TikTok. Do you want to tell our audience where they can find you on TikTok if they want to come follow your story and watch some of your videos?
I think you cut out. Can you guys hear me?
Okay, I can hear you now. Did you hear my last question?
Can you repeat it, please?
Okay, I was asking if you could just share with our audience where they can find you on your TikTok page if they want to come follow your videos and to hear more about your story.
Yeah, my TikTok name is Living the Non-Amish Life, and my whole story's there. Even like, I didn't share all of it today. There's way more to share, but a lot of it is on there. And I go in and out of like creating videos. And so sometimes I post a lot, sometimes I take a break, but it's all there. And there's always available if you want to ask questions or whatever. I always get to
them. I heard somewhere quickly that you share Amish recipes on TikTok.
I've shared some.
Okay.
Like the same. There's way more that I want to share, but it's harder to find the time and all that.
Yeah. No, we get it. We get it. With all of a sudden, you get propelled into the modern world, your time all of a sudden disappears.
Yeah.
And then you have four kids into the mix too. So.
Right. Yeah. Kudos to you. Congratulations to you.
Thank you for coming on the show and sharing your experience with us.
You're so welcome.
Yes. Thank you.
For having me. I appreciate this. It's been fun.
Good. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And once again, we want to thank Nora so much for coming on the show and sharing her experience with us. I wanted to touch on a couple of things because obviously we are an audio podcast and the audience can't see Nora. So for those of you who are interested, I would suggest you do go to her TikTok page because her English look does not look Amish at all. She's actually got like all the underside. She's got longer hair, but the underside of her head, she has all shaved and she's got a nose ring. So she does not at all look like an Amish person anymore. I think she's exercising a lot of those freedoms along with the driving and the movies and all those other things. I think she's also, you know, she can pick her own hairstyle. She can choose if she wants to have piercings or tattoos or whatever it is. She is exercising all the freedoms.
I think it's just, this is why I'm fascinated with this particular cult, the Amish, because, and I know all the cults that we do are still around, you know, they're still alive and breathing, but there's something about the Amish that I still find fascinating. And again, we talked about this many, many times. I grew up, they were around me when we went on vacations everywhere. My parents took us to Pennsylvania, down in Maryland, out Midwest. We had family in Canada. Everywhere we went, we ran into an Amish buggy. And I remember them because they had that little orange triangle on the back that they, I think at the time, I think it's still a law that they had to have because it's a slow moving vehicle. And it was just something that's ingrained in my memory. Looking at, and like Melody just said, she sent me Nora's TikTok just now as I was looking at it. So folks, yeah, go take a look. It's what Melody and I, who we just interviewed Nora and we saw her, you got to go look at a TikTok. What a difference. And the fact that you're right, Melody, that she gets to, you can see her, who her true self is, like how she gets to express who she really is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's just, I love that. It's just an amazing.
And I'm going to touch something. I'm going to jump back a little bit to one of our earliest episodes with our Naomi Schwarzentruber episode of the Amish. And I'm going to go back to that because you mentioned the triangle on the back of the buggies. I actually just recently had a conversation with Naomi because Michigan does not have that law. They don't have to have the triangles on there. And I had saw on the news here in Michigan that there was an Amish buggy in the area where Naomi was from. And there were two children thrown from the vehicle or thrown from the buggy and that were in critical care in the hospital. And I reached out to her to ask her if she had heard the story or knew anything about it, because we discussed the orange triangle thing on her episode. And as it turned out, they were actually relatives of hers. They were her cousins. And I continued to keep in touch with her. And both of those children did recover and get out of the hospital. But I was telling Naomi that I hope that this is something that will cause some of the laws to change in Michigan, because there needs to be lights or those orange triangles on the back of these buggies, because vehicles can't always see them, especially at night, dusk and dawn. These are times when they can't. That it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous for, you know, and especially the people in the buggies.
So they were hit by a car, I'm guessing.
They were hit by a car, correct. Yes, they were hit by a car. And the two children, the adults were okay, but the two of the children, I don't know how many children were in the buggy, but two of them were thrown from the buggy and were in critical care in the hospital.
Why Michigan wouldn't make that a law? It did.
The Amish fought to not have it. They wanted it to be their religious right to not have these orange triangles because they didn't want to fit into society or conform into society. And that is a, you know, an English thing to have these triangles on your, it's conforming with society, but it's a safety thing. It's a safety feature. And I think that it should be a law everywhere that they should have to have that because it's so dangerous.
I'm in my 60s, but when I was a kid, so let's go back 50 years, in Pennsylvania and New York, and I'm going to say Ohio. That's one of the things that I remember seeing on the back of these buggies was this big orange, or I shouldn't say big, but this orange triangle that lit
that's
up.
Pretty decent and, size.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the cars can see them.
Yeah, and I think it's also symbolizes for my DMV days. Is any slow moving vehicle needs to have one of them. So if you have a tractor, like one of those tractors, which a lot of the farm country people do, and they bring tractors between the fields, they have to take a highway. They have to have that orange sign on the back of it. So it just makes sense. But I didn't know that some of the Amish fought back not to have that on their vehicle, and that's silly.
Naomi brought that up in her interview. So that's an interesting little story. So that's an update on that, and hopefully that will bring about maybe some at least change in Michigan. Hopefully they'll start talking more about enforcing that, because I think it needs to be enforced for the safety of especially children who aren't choosing this, right? adults are one thing, children are another.
Yeah.
Well, once again, we want to thank Nora so much for coming on the show, sharing her story with all of us. And we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. As always, your support is appreciated. And if you enjoyed today's episode, if you could just take a moment to rate and review us on platforms such as Apple and Spotify, it does really help us out, especially those reviews on Apple. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes as well.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can also find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a personal experience with cult or human trafficking that you'd like to share, you can reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you happen to be an ex-cult member and you're looking for additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook as well.
And if you'd like to hear more from me, I have two other podcasts. One's called Digital Dating with Anonymous Andrew, and one is called The Weekend Rant. And I have a good weekend rant coming up for you this weekend. And if you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining this podcast, we could use your support. So in the show notes, you'll see something that says, buy us a cup of coffee. And it's a link to a donation site where you can donate $5 or $10. Every bit helps in our mission to spread awareness about cults and human trafficking.
And I'm just going to add here that that link will take you to, I believe, the Anonymous Andrew Studios link. But that money does go toward... Yes. Helping with the Cultimatum podcast, just to make that clear, you might not see the term or the name for Cultimatum, but Cultimatum is under the Anonymous Andrew Studios. So if you see that money is still going towards Cultimatum podcast. And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.